Hello, and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. Today's podcast number 1960. The topic is training, and the title is Push Day Workout Template for Under 60 Minutes. So I thought this would be pretty fun to share via a podcast. One of my business clients, they are a personal trainer. They are the personal training director at their gym. And we're working together to create workout templates and discuss exercise selection concepts. We're writing the templates for them to use, but also for their trainers on their staff to use. They want to have cohesive programming among all the trainers. And this will help improve the quality of the outcome for the clients. Therefore, they'll sign up for more sessions, you know, get more referrals, that kind of thing. It also helps for the individual trainers themselves so they can learn a little bit more within a solid structure. So really enjoying that. One of the things we covered recently was a push day, and specifically for 60 minutes or less. The session that the trainers have with the clients are 60 minutes. They have some 30-minute sessions. We have different templates for that. But for the 60-minute sessions, the idea is that they would see the person. They might chit-chat, talk a little bit about life. Maybe they're warming up on a treadmill or something. There's going to be a little bit of talking at the end. So we're really looking for about 40 minutes of active time, 40 to 50 minutes. So it's an hour workout. However, we're accounting for there being a little bit of a getting into it and a little bit of a getting out of it kind of stage. Now, what'll be fun is paired with today's podcast, I'm also going to be posting a video on our YouTube channel that'll show me going through this template with a workout. I'm going to try to do it on the same day, but the YouTube videos take some time to edit, but that should be out on the same day you're hearing this podcast. Now, why are we doing a push day? The clients that the trainer has, one of the common kind of session frequencies that their gym offers and has people sign up for are 3 sessions per week with a trainer. So the person actually sees the trainer 3 times a week, which is great. And then they have another option where they would only see the trainer once per week. So they're rotating through. Each time they meet, they're rotating through a different focal point each workout. So when they meet the trainer 3 times a week, we're doing a push-pull legs. Now, we're actually doing it in the sequence of legs, then pull, then push, because legs tend to be a weakness for a lot of people, especially they're going to have a higher percentage of females signing up for training than they do males. Females are more likely to be interested in lower body, so we're starting off right away with that. If males tend to, more so than females, avoid legs, so it's good to start with that early in the week, get their kind of like cruddy day out, and then we end on Friday with push muscles, so that actually encourages more attendance on the Friday sessions, so for the males, because they actually want to come in and get a good pump for the weekend. And then also that kind of order coincides with where people tend to have their weaknesses or in their legs and their pull muscles, like their posture, their upper back, more so than push muscles. So when we're early in the week, when we're more fresh coming out of the weekend, with better sleep, hopefully better food, hopefully, we want to do the weaknesses first, save the fun stuff for the end of the week. So that's the purpose for the order that we have, legs, pull, push. Now, the clients who are only meeting their trainers once a week, week one, they do legs together. Week two, they do pull together. Week three, they do push together. So we still use the templates. They're just going to use them in a different frequency, different order than the clients who are coming 3 times per week. The overall workout format, the template, is to start with a chest isolation exercise, and I'm going to go into way more detail here in a second. Chest isolation, then a pressing compound movement, a tricep isolation, and then the entire workout, we're going to have what's called a trailing superset for a related weakness. That's the format. Now, to some people, that's going to sound very simplistic because they know what those terms meant. To other people, that's all going to sound like a foreign language. So I'm hopefully going to go through now. We'll talk about it, teach about it, and get everybody ending today's podcast with a good understanding of what's going on. Now, in the YouTube video, you're going to see my chest isolation exercise is cable chest flies, just standing cable crossovers. It's one of my favorite exercises for chest. My pressing compound movement is going to be a barbell reverse band bench press. Why? is explained in the video. As I say in the video, people typically don't think of barbell bench presses as good for chest development, but that's really an advanced kind of people. In intermediate and beginners, barbell chest press is great. And then if you reverse band it, that actually adds to the tensional loading throughout the entire contraction, which is actually really good for chest growth. My tricep isolation is a seated facing away overhead tricep extension. So think about like on a lat pull down machine. Rather than sitting down and facing the cable stack, you're going to be actually sitting on the seat but facing away from the cable stack. And instead of using that long overhand handle, you're going to attach like a rope grip to it. So you're going to be seated facing away from the cable stack, kind of leaning forward and doing an overhead extension with the ropes, tricep rope. That's a really good isolation into the upper tricep. Now, like upper tricep isn't really an area, but the triceps, tri is three, seps is Latin for muscle, so three muscles. We have the inner head of the tricep, which is located down by the elbow joint. That's really involved in locking out like a barbell bench press, for example. Then we have the long head of the tricep, which is the biggest, bulkiest part, and that's the whole backside of the arm. Then we have the outside head of the tricep, which is typically referred to as the horseshoe, which is that knobby bit on the outside that adds a really neat detail when it's growing and grown and nice and thick. So the triceps, when you do typical presses, dumbbell presses, barbell presses, you're going to be working on that inner head very well, and even kind of the outer head, that horseshoe part, pretty well. So I like doing a tricep isolation, especially in an overhead, more stretched position, because that better targets the long head of the tricep. And that's going to help kind of even out the tricep growth than just what you get from presses alone, or from things that keep the upper arm bone kind of next to the body. Think of like a weighted dip. The tricep, the upper arm bone kind of stays close to the body as you'd be doing that, whereas an overhead extension, the upper arm bone is way above the head, so it's very far away from the body, and that's going to expose more of that upper connection into the shoulder of the long head of the tricep. So that's a really good way to add a lot of bulk to the tricep, and making sure that you're hitting the tricep in totality by doing an overhead movement paired with any kind of regular pressing movements. Now, those are my three main movements: chest isolation, pressing movement, then a tricep isolation. Then my trailing superset, I did lateral raises. So when we think of our push muscles, we would think of chest, shoulders, and triceps. If I'm doing a chest isolation, then a pressing movement, then a tricep isolation, pretty good for chest and triceps, but where do you get the shoulders? And that's where I would use the trailing superset to get more shoulder work in. Or you could do the pressing compound could actually be an overhead press or a high inclined press, and that'll involve more shoulders. You're going to be trading a little bit of chest and shoulders, but if you want to get more shoulders, that would be a good trade to make at that time. So there's a lot of personalization, a lot of modification to this overall template. Now, when we think about the individual elements, if we're starting with a chest isolation, why are we doing that? We're starting with chest isolation because we want to what's called pre-exhaust the chest. Before we go to a chest press where the chest is involved, but also the front of the shoulders and the triceps can help, we want to do a chest isolation movement so that way our chest is pre-fatigued going into the pressing movement. So that way during the pressing movement, our chest fatigues, it fails first. Whenever muscle fails first in an exercise, you're going to be maximally damaging that tissue, but everything else gets a submaximal stimulus. Probably still very good stimulus, but a submaximal stimulus. Now, myself, I have short upper arm bones. Anyone with short upper arm bones is going to find that they have a hard time getting good full chest development from presses. Their triceps tend to take over. Now, they can eventually get their chest totally fine, assuming they're okay with their arms also being massive, and it also depends on a lot of technical aspects as well. But you almost have to get through the triceps to get to the chest. By doing chest isolation first, you're going to be pre-exhausting the chest, so that way when you go to a press, the chest dies before the triceps do. So that way you get maximal stimulus of the chest, and you're still going to get some triceps for sure. And then we finish off the triceps with the tricep isolation at the end. So the layering of the movements being chest isolation into a compound press and then a tricep isolation, it's actually a double layer of pre-exhaust. The first movement, the chest isolation, pre-exhausts the chest. And then the chest press finishes off the chest, but it pre-exhausts the triceps. And then we finish off the triceps with the tricep isolation. So doing the chest isolation first, it will ensure that during the press, we maximally stimulate, annihilate, get everything we can out of the chest muscles. Now, will that make you a little bit weaker on the chest press? Yes. But it's an investment in strength over time. So over time, if you do this format, it helps you build a really big, strong chest. And then if you ever wanted to kind of really test your press, you would come in that day and not do the chest isolation first. Or you just do maximal, like a submaximal warm-up sets. And then you would not pre-fatigue the chest and go into the chest press with a fresh chest. Then all of a sudden, bam, you're going to hit some big weights. Because now your weak link of the chest is no longer weak anymore because you've been isolating it, pre-exhausting it, and fully fatiguing it. So I use pre-fatigue for strength athletes all the time. We got tons of elite totals, set a bunch of records. People are, internationally traveling all over the country for awesome, national level competitions. So it works extremely well. It also is really great at protecting the joints. So I use a lot of pre-exhaust for strength athletes. It's an awesome tactic when you're in the off season or in the building phase. So that's the first movement is chest isolation, and that's the why. So we want to make sure the chest is pre-fatigued before we go to the presses. The sets and reps. Typically, we're going to aim for 3 to 5 working sets. And the rep range is going to be related to time under tension. We typically want a time under tension range of around 20 to 40 seconds. That's the sweet spot of like really good muscle damage with a good combination of weight load. When we think of damaging muscle tissue, there's kind of two main ways is shear force damage. The weight is so heavy, it's tearing apart the muscle fibers. And then there's metabolic damage where what we're doing to it makes the muscle burn. It can't process all the metabolites. It can't do everything it normally would do. It starts to fail in functionality due to not being able to process everything that's involved with a muscular contraction. The body then says, holy crap, we didn't do very well with that. We have to make this system more robust. And one of the ways of making it more robust is to make it bigger. So we can think of shear force damage and metabolic damage. And both are accomplished relatively well in a 20 to 40 second time under tension range. Can you go under 20 seconds? Sure. You might need to do more sets to get a total volume that's appropriate. Can you go over 40 seconds? Sure. But you might need more sets to get a total intensity amount that would you typically get from the 20 to 40 second range. So you can play with variable time under tension ranges. Maybe your first couple warm-up sets, you're at 40 to 60 seconds. Then you do one or two sets of 20 to 40 seconds. Then one really hard set of like 10 to 20 seconds. Great. That's fine. Totally fine. You just want to be somewhere in the ballpark of 20 to 40 seconds. You can easily kind of extend that to 10 to 60 seconds, but the majority of what you do should be within around that 20 to 40 second range. So 3 to 5 working sets, 20 to 40 seconds. Exercise choices. Really, there's a lot. There's an enormous amount. If I was thinking of somebody wanting to grow muscle tissue, because this is, in a sense, a muscle building overall template. But let's say you want to build muscle but lose fat. Then I would think of a movement that allowed me to burn more overall calories. So I might think of an unstable movement like cable crossovers or even dumbbell flies before I would do a stabilized movement like a machine chest fly. The reason why is if it's unstable, I have to use more muscles to control my position. That's going to burn more overall calories. Now, these are all small little nuances, but when you add them up over every exercise selection, over every workout, over every week, over every month, over every year, it adds up. But that would be something to consider is if your goal is muscle growth plus fat loss, what allows me to isolate the chest but also involve a lot of other kind of factors such as stability and balance? If my goal was muscle growth and say I also wanted strength, then I would also probably pick something that involves stability because it's going to allow you to challenge and stimulate the stability muscles, which then translates better to strength over time. Let's say you want a pure bodybuilding. Well, then I'm going to isolate the hell out of it, and I'll probably do something that I can control very well, where stabilization is not going to be a problem. And that would be like, say, machine chest flies. So you'll see a lot of IFBB pro and drug-tested pros, if their goal is purely muscle growth, they're going to use a lot of machines for their chest flies. Let's say you want athleticism. You want chest growth, but also athleticism. Maybe you're a tactical athlete, first responder. You just like feeling athletic. Maybe you're going to do like TRX flies, chest flies, or use rings for chest flies. Do something just totally weird, fun, crazy that involves a lot of oddity, a lot of other challenges, such as like the TRX chest flies, you're going to have a lot of core stability. You're also going to have to involve a lot of hip stability and bracing. You're going to have a lot of breathing components you're going to deal with. So you can really play with the exercise selection to also incorporate whatever the other overall themes are for the individual. Now, if we think of an aging population, probably going to do a machine. Just let the machine do the work of stabilizing it, and then just let that person focus on just their chest doing the work. Now, the next movement we go into is a pressing compound movement. All that, like the term compound, is the opposite of isolation. Chest isolation means I'm trying to just use my chest. I don't want my front shoulders or my triceps or any other muscles kind of being a limiting factor or even to be involved. Whereas with pressing compounds, any kind of a compound movement, you're getting multiple joints, multiple muscles involved. You would still have a muscle that you're like aiming mostly for, or an intended pathway or movement. For example, for strength athletes, you might have like a path that you want to move the weight in, or a movement focus rather than a muscle focus. But there's typically going to be one thing you're focusing on, but other things are involved. So for example, any kind of chest press, you're going to have some stability muscles involved. You're going to have the chest, front shoulders maybe trying to help. You're going to have a lot of tricep help. And that's okay. We want that because those secondary muscles being now able to aid in the movement are going to help push the chest further into fatigue because they allow us to continue to move weight and create volume beyond what the chest can do just on its own. Now, the fun of that is we can really play with this exercise, really personalizing the exercise selection. The sets and reps, again, usually 3 to 5 working sets, and that's correlated with a pretty good amount of volume, weekly volume to translate to good productive results. But then also we have that 60-minute time cap. So 3 to 5 working sets is going to be pretty good there. We want the time and attention range is, again, 20 to 40 seconds is a sweet spot for muscle growth. But you can go under that if you want to focus more on strength. You can go over that if you want to focus on burning more calories. So there's a lot of leeway there. And you can also just vary set by set. You don't have to pick one range and stay in it the whole time. You could do, like I said, a couple sets of high reps, high time and attention, a couple sets of medium, a couple sets of heavy. You can kind of play with that. Now, exercise selection. If your goal is muscle growth, you're going to pick something that allows you to still maximally recruit and feel your chest. Whatever that is. It could be a dumbbell chest press. Maybe your arm angle, rather than being flared at 90 degrees or 60 degrees, you're like at 45 degrees. You can play with the angle of the upper arm, play with the angle of the hands. So maybe it's not a true basic like T-shaped chest press. It's more of like a modified 45-degree angle like neutral press. Hey, if that makes you feel your chest better, great. Your whole focus is chest contraction, chest extension. You want that time under tension being constant on the chest. That's why in the video I reverse band bench press. I do reverse bands on the bench press because the reverse bands, what happens is typically with a regular barbell bench, and this is true of dumbbells as well, is the weakest point is the very bottom. So as you're coming out of the bottom, you're contracting your chest. And as the fibers are starting to shorten under weight load to create the contraction, the weight resistance is actually becoming less and less and less. So as you are going against gravity, it's constant, but your joint angles and the muscle positions are in better, more advantageous positions as you get closer to completing the movement. You also have more recruitment from the triceps starting to be able to help, whereas at the very bottom, it's almost purely just chest alone. So as you complete the contraction, the stimulus for the chest actually lessens. Whereas when you do reverse banding, that when you do the appropriate type of banding, the appropriate amount of banding, you can actually have it to where it's consistent from top to bottom. And you get a much deeper, much harder chest contraction into that type of force. So I really like that. And I've had a lot of practice playing with it. So it's something that's a little more nuanced, something a little more advanced. But I do really enjoy that movement for chest growth. But that would be the idea for that one is if it's chest, if your muscle growth is your main focus, whatever lets you feel your chest more. If your goal is muscle growth and fat loss, again, try to think of something that helps you burn more calories. So you're going to do a free weight press more than you do a machine press. That helps you kind of play around with that a little bit. You could get fun and creative and do like say 20 seconds time under tension of a free weight movement right into then a like 20 seconds of time under tension for the like a machine. So maybe you have them do like a set of six on dumbbells, then they sit into a chest press machine and try a set of like 6 to 12 reps. So you could do like a little mini superset like that if you wanted to play with that stimulus. But there's a lot of freedom in there. The overriding theme though, if your goal is fat loss, is to burn more calories. If your goal is muscle growth and strength, you're probably going to want to do something related to strength. So like a barbell bench, if your goal is also to like compete in powerlifting, then that would be a really good crossover because it's involved in both sports. Now, muscle growth and athleticism, do some weird stuff. You know, you can do alternating arm chest presses. You can do chest presses where you only have your upper back on the bench, but you're actually laying crossways on the bench. So you have to self-support your hips with good leg pressure. There's a lot of variations, a lot of modifications. You can do glute bridge floor press. This is a really weird variation of a decline press, but it involves the whole body and the core. So there's a lot of fun selections you can choose if you want athleticism. Aging population, again, probably going to go to a machine or something that's a relatively controlled instability. So for example, free motion chest press is a machine, Free Motion is the name of a machine company, where they're pressing from cables, so there's a little bit of freedom to the movement, but the thing is going to fall on their face like a dumbbell could. So it depends on the exercise selection. In general, you're going to pick something that's safe. The stability isn't going to be the limiting factor. Their chest strength, their pressing muscles are going to be the limiting factor. Last thing we have is tricep isolation. So like we said, the chest compound press is going to kind of pre-fatigue the triceps, tricep isolation then finishes it off. Sets and reps, again, I know it's boring, but looking for 3 to 5 sets, 20 to 40 seconds of time under tension. Again, you can play with those ranges if you want to emphasize something a little more than, like emphasize more endurance rather than strength or vice versa, or just to create more variety from workout to workout. Now, exercise selection, the same parameters is if you're going for fat loss and muscle growth, something that's unstable, even like maybe unilateral. So that way they have to burn twice the calories because they're doing a set on the left arm and the set on the right arm. So they're going to have multiple, like they're going to have twice the bouts of effort to burn even more calories. If you're doing strength, you want to stay with a heavy compound type movement. And that could be dips, for example, neutral grip, chest press, floor presses. You could do skull crushers, JM presses, a lot of variety there. If you're looking at muscle growth and athleticism, then you could do like, hell, you could even do renegade rows because there's like a tricep involved there in the push-up part. You could do like dumbbell burpees. That's an awful thing to do to somebody, but it does involve triceps. There's a lot of variations of athletic style things you can do. And then aging population, again, you can have some instability to it, but don't make the stability the limiting factor. So a machine could work very well for that population. Now, those are the three main movements: chest isolation, press compound, then a tricep isolation. The thing that we said you'd do, though, throughout the entire workout is a trailing superset. What a trailing superset is, you're going to pair with each of the three main movements: chest isolation, press compound movement, and then tricep isolation, which each of them, you're going to pair a set of effort, a bout of effort, of something that's a weakness. So in the video, you'll see that I do lateral raises. I want to involve my middle shoulder muscle, my middle deltoid. Deltoid's a fancy word for shoulders. So I want to involve my middle deltoid because it helps create width. When you look at somebody from the front, the thicker, the larger their middle deltoids are, the wider they look. And one of the best ways to hit the middle deltoids is lateral raises. So I was doing a set of lateral raises with each working set of the chest isolation. Then I moved on, I warmed up the chest press, the compound movement, and then with each working set of the compound movement, I did the lateral raises again. And then move on to our tricep exercise. You warm up, do your warm-up sets, then with each working set of the tricep isolation, you do another set of lateral raises. So if I'm doing 3 to 5 working sets for the chest isolation, 3 to 5 working sets for the chest compound movement, press, and 3 to 5 working sets for the tricep isolation, that means I'm doing 9 to 15 working sets for the trailing superset focus. That's a ton of volume, but it's a really great way to bring up a known weakness. Like, it could be related, like we said, is like middle shoulders kind of pairs well with a push day. It could be unrelated. Maybe you want to throw in some calves, some core work. Maybe you want to add some glutes. So you do glutes for this client, for example. The trainers and his clients are going to have clients do legs on Monday. Well, on Friday, they could come back and do the trailing superset, could be extra glute work or extra leg work. So if they want to put an extra emphasis on legs, we could actually add 9 to 15 extra working sets of legs later in the week. Now, that's a great kind of capacity, a larger volume of workload that you can play with that allows you to have more personalization to the programming. Do you have to do the exact same focus throughout the entire workout? So if I do lateral raises paired with the work exercise number 1, do I have to do lateral raises with exercise number 2 and 3? No. You can change that. However, just adding 3 random working sets of lateral raises once a week isn't going to do much. So the idea of the 9 to 15 working sets is it's a large enough volume that it's significant in that it almost feels like an entire workout in addition to the workout you're doing. So if you change focus each section, you're only getting 3 working sets per whatever thing you add. It's not going to really be an additional volume that's significant. So I would encourage you to keep that same focus, but maybe change the exercise that you're doing each time. So for me, I did lighter dumbbell raises with the chest isolation, heavier dumbbell raises with the press compound movement, and then I switched to a cable lateral raise for the tricep isolation pairing. The reason why was it changes the strength curve. A cable lateral raise, the way I showed it in the video, the challenging part of the movement comes when the muscle is most stretched. Give me 1 second. It comes when the muscle is most stretched when you're doing it against a cable. Whereas against dumbbells, the heaviest part of the strength curve is when the muscle is fully contracted. So you can actually flip the strength curve to change the stress kind of variety, the stress type, the stress feel into the shoulder muscle to get a greater, fuller development of that middle deltoid. So you can weight it maximally when it's lengthened and or when it's shortened. And that's really cool to be able to play with that. But that's the idea of the format again, is you have a chest isolation, 3 to 5 working sets, 20 to 40 seconds time under tension, then a press compound movement. Again, 3 to 5 working sets, 20 to 40 seconds time under tension. Then a tricep isolation exercise, 3 to 5 working sets of 20 to 40 seconds timer retention. You can play with those timer retentions, totally fine. When you're first learning this, when somebody's just learning the format, you might not have time, you're not very unlikely to have time to get 5 working sets on all 3 movements, plus all the trailing supersets. You're unlikely to be able to get 30 working sets in 60 minutes, but it gives you places where you can start with 3-3-3, see how that goes. Maybe you like that format, but you want to add a couple extra working sets of presses one day. Or another day, you want to add a couple extra sets of triceps. So the 3 to 5 range is allowing for variety to where if in the first 3 working sets you feel like you annihilated the muscle, move on. If after the first 3 working sets you're like, well, it felt great, but it kind of took me a set or two to find the right weight, I wish I had an extra set so I could really push the muscle to fatigue and failure, go ahead and do that. So you can do anywhere from 3 to 4 to 5 working sets per exercise. Then paired with those 3 movements, the chest isolation, press compound, tricep isolation, you would do a trailing superset of any kind of weakness thing that you want to add to the overall workout. Now, if you have any questions about this, check this out on YouTube. It'll be in that video. You can learn more about it. You can also go to our website. You can always shoot me a message from the website. In the bottom of the homepage is a contact form. You can always send me any messages you have there. We also have a ton of services if you're interested in this type of programming where you learn a template and then you get to personalize it and play with it on your own. We have our business coaching service, which is what this client is doing. Super personalized weekly virtual consultations. One of my favorite things that I get to do. Absolutely love it. We also have one-on-one coaching, online coaching. That's a ton of education. You get completely personalized programming, and we actually do teach templates to those clients. Over half of my clients are personal trainers, so we do a lot of template teaching. And then the other option we have is our live monthly programming service, where you get a pre-written workout on a focus of, say, bodybuilding, powerlifting, or like athleticism, female shape development. You would pick a category, and you're going to get new workouts every 4 weeks, but with each workout, it shows you kind of the structure, and then you can plug and play different movements over time and actually learn how to personalize it on your own. So the degree of those services, the reason why we have them is the price differences. So if you have the money, you can get more one-on-one coaching, more education, and just a greater depth of service. But if you don't have the money for the business coaching, the next level down cost-wise, is the one-on-one coaching. The next level down cost-wise is the live monthly programming. And then we also have free content on the website. So there's stuff where if you have the money and you want to learn, it's available. If you want to learn but you don't have any money, that's still available. And that's why I like making the YouTube videos now that I have the capacity to do that. So I'll be trying to make those 1, 2, or 3 every single week. So if you have any questions, you need anything, I hope that there's any option. I hope some of these options work for you. Just let me know if you need something. You can always shoot me a message on the website. Okay. If you like the podcast, please share the podcast. If you like the podcast, please consider donating to support the podcast, which you can do on our website. Also, if you like the information we share in the podcast, you can find more from us on our social media channels. You can find us and follow us on Instagram and YouTube under the name Brutal Iron Gym. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.